Broadcasting from the Taz and Lake Lodge studios on the Sporting Journal Radio Network. Heard in Minnesota, the Dakotas, Wisconsin, and online at sportingjournalradio.com. This is Sporting Journal Radio, presented by OnX. Know where you stand with OnX. Now here's your host, Brett Amundson.
We're going to talk grouse, rough grouse, sharp-tailed grouse, and of course we'll hit pheasants for the pheasant opener. Ted Dick, the Forest Game Bird Coordinator for the DNR, will join us to talk about numbers on the landscape in the woods. Jared Wicklund will talk about numbers on the landscape in the fields from Pheasants Forever. And Scott Rawl from Nobles County will tell us about a big event that they got coming up next weekend. We also have an OnX tip with Ben Bredigan here in a second. Joe Henry updates us from Lake of the Woods. Eric Osberg checks in from Otter Tail Lakes Country. And Doug Lear will get a North Dakota Game and Fish Outdoors report for us.
OnX Hunt. Ever heard of it? Next time you see that guy at your local shop who always punches his tag on a stud whitetail, ask him. He'll tell you about the most trusted source for mapping, with nationwide landowner names, private and public land boundaries, including walk-in areas, map tools to mark spots, and the ability to view your maps without cell service. And that's just scratching the surface. It's your time to be known as the big buck guy around town. Download the leader in hunt mapping on Google Play or the App Store. OnX Hunt. Know where you stand.
OnX. Now your weekly two-minute tip from OnX. Know where you stand.
All right, Ben Bredigan from OnX Hunt is back to tell us how we can have more success in the field this fall. Say we're going to chase whitetails around, whether with a bow or get ready for the gun season. How can we use waypoints in the OnX Hunt app to help us this year, Ben?
So again, waypoints, again, just very simple, easy way to use the app, but very, very popular. It's one of the core foundations of it. What I like to do is when I'm hunting a property, let's just say we have a 200-acre piece of property that we hunt. The first thing I'll do is I'll go in and mark all the areas that I have stands in, all the areas that I have blinds in, and then as well as food sources and bedding areas. So it's amazing what happens when you lay all of this stuff out on a map and you just get that perspective. There's been times that when I was down south working for Primos on our property, we'd lay out all of our stands on it and we'd be like, oh my gosh, there's not a stand within, you know, 1,000 yards of this area. Mm-hmm. And it's like, has anyone ever went back in there or messed around? And they're like, no. So that's one of the first things, is just finding areas that you aren't utilizing is one of the big ones. A number of other things as well, in terms of when I'm out scouting in the spring, that's a great time right after the season closes, you know, that December, January, February, just to find what deer are doing, finding scrape or not scrape, finding rubs, trails, all of that kind of thing. So I'll go walk around and I'll mark, all right, here's a nice rub, here's a giant trail. So all these different icons are available on the app to use. So those are two of my favorite ways.
I was surprised at how many icons there were. I'm just trying to pull it up here. I see there's a Bigfoot icon right away. It's our Sasquatch. Yeah, I've used that. It's in my recently used, so I must have seen Bigfoot a couple of times. But the amount of icons, I mean, you can pretty much set this. I mean, the old days where you just had, you know, an X that you drop on a map, or you know, even if you were handwriting, you just write, you know, you'd put an X there, and then you go back and look at it and be like, what did that X mean? I don't remember why I wrote that, but. Yeah, you got food plots, geese, hazards, hogs. Yeah. Oh, good. You got one for Jeep. I saw a Jeep in the woods the other day. I marked it on X.
Another great way to use it is you can attach photos to waypoints as well.
Really?
So for trail cameras, I can't tell you how many. First off, I can't tell you how many trail cameras I have put out in the woods, and just I don't know where I put this trail camera anymore. So now, every trail cam I put, I'll go put an icon. And then what you can do as well is you can attach photos to waypoints. So if I've got, you know, a few big bucks that are using that camera, what I'll do is attach those photos to that icon. So I know, okay, this is where I'm seeing that. This is where I'm seeing him. Another great way to use the waypoint feature.
I tried to attach a picture of Bigfoot to the Sasquatch waypoint, but it was too blurry. Didn't work. Thanks, Ben. Stay tuned each week right here on Sporting Journal Radio for your weekly 2-minute tip from Onyx. Or see our video tips on the Sporting Journal Radio Facebook page or YouTube channel.
Onyx Hunt. Maps for hunting. Made by hunters. Download the Onyx Hunt app on Google Play or the App Store. Or start your free trial today at onyxmaps.com. Onyx. Know where you stand.
We are going to talk walleyes in the Rainy River when we come back in 30 seconds with Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods Tourism on Sporting Journal Radio. If you want to have success fishing in Minnesota, you have to go where the fish are. And there may be no lake with more fish in it than Lake of the Woods. Not just big numbers of walleye, sauger, perch, eel pout, pike, muskie, bass, and sturgeon, but numbers of big fish too. Between the Rainy River, the main lake, and the Northwest Angle, you have over 50 resorts to choose from. Guided fishing allows for heated transportation to heated fish houses. Learn how to book a trip now at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That's lakeofthewoodsmn.com. All right, now it's time to check in with Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods Tourism to get a fishing report from that big walleye factory in northern Minnesota. Joe, how's it going?
Oh, Brett, it's going good. How are you?
Not too bad. A little jealous. We had our week off of hunting here, so it's been work all week. And while I'm here working and not getting to enjoy the outdoors very much, I see you're up on the Rainy River doing some fishing.
Well, I tell you, it was nice up there. I mean, it was really nice. And, you know, I'll tell you, nothing, and I've been in my office a lot lately too. In fact, I had meetings both mornings. I was there until noon, and then I had a chance to get out on the water. And I'll tell you what, you want to talk about, you know, we talk about how the outdoors is good for the soul and it helps clear your head. And you know, for an outdoors minded person, it is so, so wonderful getting out in the outdoors right now. Fall is a short season anyway, and being out on the Rainy River with, you know, migration going on, the colors, walleyes are in the river, shiners are in the river. I mean, it was just cool. It was a fun couple of days, I'll tell you.
So that's what a lot of the resorts do up there, right? They actually can net their own shiners off their docks like that?
Yeah, yes, you can. You know, you gotta have a bait license and all that good stuff. I mean, you just can't do it if it's your eye, you know. But yes, the resorts do it. The bait dealers up there do it. People that have bait shops and things. And, you know, those emerald shiners, I mean, not only do they have live emerald shiners to fish with right now up there for jigging, but also they will freeze those emerald shiners to use them this winter, next spring, next summer. I mean, you know, if they get enough shiners, they'll put them in freezers and hang on to them for a while. You know, every year is different. And sometimes the shiners run really early and it's too early for you to harvest them for bait. It doesn't work good. Now that it's prime time, the water's cold enough, you know, sometimes they just don't run. Or sometimes they don't run enough. Or sometimes they're the small pinheads, the real little ones that you really don't harvest. Right now, we got the great big emerald shiners running. If we could keep this up for a while, that would be good. It also pulls walleyes into the river, you know, no doubt about that.
So is that what you were using up there?
We were, yep. We were using live emeralds on a jig, and we were fishing the river, Brad, and it was interesting because we were just sliding to different holes in the river. And, you know, we would vertical jig, but in some areas where we had some current, we would let our lines go down a little bit more, like a 45-degree angle, and more horizontal jig a little bit, where you're almost pulling it against the current and then letting it drop back and hit the bottom of the river and pulling it forward, let it drop back. And every time that hits the bottom of the river, it's given a thunk. You know, for a walleye, especially in that stained water with a lateral line, it feels that or hears that thunk or senses it with the lateral line, and that's usually something living that it might want to eat. That pulls more walleyes in, and then, of course, the jig and the color of the jig, the flash of the jig, the minnow, the action, all of a sudden it's game on. But we got some nice walleyes. It wasn't a slam fest. You know, we had to work for every fish we caught, but we caught. We caught some little ones. We caught some nice saugers. We caught some nice keeper walleyes. We were upriver quite a ways east of Vidette, and we ended up catching just one in the slot. We didn't catch the big fish. Got a feeling they're still coming in. And I can tell you that a lot of times around that Halloween or even deer hunting, that is when some of the big sleds get caught out of there, you know?
Well, it felt like summer this last week. It was so warm.
Yeah. Yeah, it was warm, and you know, even the water temps and things. I mean, the water temp was low 50s, and it was just a warm week. And you know, I think as it gets colder, a little bit tougher fishing conditions. You just got to dress warm, and better for fishing, though, I think. You know, and I will tell you this, that we were on the river, and I will tell you that a lot of our charter boats were out on the lake, and, you know, we did have some wind this week, so they're a little limited, but I heard a few different reports from different parts of the lake where when they got on those fish, it was good. It was not only big fish, but it was good numbers of fish. So there's a lot of walleyes in the lake. You know, Brett, I always tell people that, yeah, the Rainy River right now, there's walleyes running. It's a fun tradition. Have almost any size boat fish the river because it's small water. And it's awesome. And, you know, there's 42 miles of navigable Rainy River all the way from the mouth at Wheeler's Point all the way up to Birchdale, which is about 30 miles east of Bidette. But and there's access points, boat access ramps. You can find them on our website if you need to. The point is, a lot of water to fish. Same time, not all the walleyes in the lake go in the river. A lot of them do, but not all of them. There is the majority of the walleyes are still out on that lake. So if you can get out on that lake and get out there jigging, you know, there's a lot of fish to be had. And those are, they're kind of getting positioned for that early ice.
And you were doing some filming up there?
We were, yeah. Yep. We had a gentleman by the name of John Bergsma, who's got a show called Fisherman's Digest. John fished the professional walleye trail for many, many years. He used to fish it with Brian Nye, who's one of the owners, one of the family members of Adrian's Resort. And, you know, he's fished for, you know, 18 years on the circuit. He now has a fishing show. He puts out a new show every week, so 52 weeks a year. This guy is on the move, man. And he's based out of Michigan, so we don't see his show as much here in Minnesota and in the Dakotas and Wisconsin and Iowa. But his show is now going nationwide, so he's getting a little bit more exposure, and we'll start seeing more of John. And he came up to tell the story about the fall run on the Rainy River, and that's exactly what we did. So we fished a couple of afternoons together, and, boy, he's a good stick. I'll tell you, I don't get out fish very often, but boy, and he had one jig that he used. He had one jig he used, and that was the right color. And it was that jig from Tom's Tackle that was pink in the front, glow white in the middle, and gold in the back. Hmm. And that was it.
Interesting. All right. Well, people want to get up there, fish yet this fall, or maybe start planning an ice fishing trip up the Lake of the Woods. Where should they go, Joe?
You know what? Check out our website, Brett, and that is lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Thank you, Joe. Doug Lear has the North Dakota Game and Fish Outdoors report just 30 seconds from now.
No matter how cold, no matter how much snow there is, the perch don't stand a chance.
Fish legendary Devil's Lake for their famous jumbo perch and walleye in the warm comfort of a snow bear at Haybale Heights Campground and Resort. Fishing for perch requires mobility, and you can't get more mobile than a fish house with tracks. The snow bear fleet is on the ice every day at Haybale Heights, and you could be too. Every winter requires a trip to Devil's Lake, and there's no better way to do it than in a snow bear at Haybale Heights. Visit haybaleheights.com to book your trip today. Now it's time for your North Dakota Game and Fish Outdoors report with Doug Lear. It's brought to you by Haybale Heights Campground and Resort on Devil's Lake. Visit haybaleheights.com.
North Dakota's pheasant season should provide more opportunities in the field. Hi, this is Doug Lear with your weekly North Dakota Game and Fish Department Outdoors report. The North Dakota pheasant season runs from October 10th through January 3rd, 2021, and hunters should find more birds on the landscape. State Game and Fish Department Upland Game Biologist R.J. Gross said results of the annual upland late summer count brought some good news, and we had good residual cover to start the year, good weather for nesting and brood rearing. There were some areas that experienced abnormally dry periods throughout the summer, but nesting appeared to be successful. Now, here's the numbers. Total pheasants observed per 100 miles are up 38% from last year, but still 14% below the 10-year average. Brood per 100 miles up 30% from last year and 16% below the 10-year average. Average brood size up 10% from 2019, but 5% below the 10-year average. Now, the final summary is based on 275 survey runs made along 100 brood routes across North Dakota. In the northwest part of the state, there were 12 broods and 91 pheasants per 100 miles. The southeast had 5 broods and 41 pheasants per 100 miles. And the southwest, 8 broods, 70 pheasants per 100 miles. Now, the day limit is 3 roosters per day. The possession limit is 12. This means if you travel for a weekend pheasant hunt, you can shoot 3 a day. But if you are out for 5 days, you can't bring back 15 roosters. It's 12. So what this means is you travel for the weekend pheasant hunt. You can shoot 3 per day, but if you're out for 5 days, you can't bring back 15 roosters. The possession limit is 12. You could eat 3 roosters and then hunt an extra day, but the number that you can transport is 12. That's the difference between your daily limit and your possession limit. If you have questions, contact your local game warden, check out the Game and Fish Department website, where you can also buy your license online at gf.nd.gov. That's this week's North Dakota Game and Fish Department Outdoors Report. I'm biologist Doug Lear.
And we got a report from Otter Tail Lakes Country, and we come back in 30 seconds.
Looking for fall adventure? Might as well pick a place with over 1,000 lakes. Otter Tail County, Minnesota is in the middle of everywhere, offers a simpler pace, and has something for everyone. Find your inner otter at OtterTailLakesCountry.com.
Otter Tail Lakes Country is where we're headed next with Eric Osberg. Eric, how's it going, man?
Good. How are you doing, Brett?
I didn't realize that we went through fall and winter and are back to summer already.
There was somebody out on a jet ski.
I bet.
Now, they eventually headed to the landing, right, to put it on the trailer for what I assuming was their last year, but they did a bunch of circles and, you know, they played a little. It wasn't like they took a straight shot, you know, to the access. They played a little bit to get one last spin.
Well, it doesn't feel like pheasant opener this weekend across.
Right.
You know, I know if you're going to be out there pheasant hunting, keep the trip short. Make sure your dog's got a lot of water out there because it is going to be way too hot to be running dogs all day for pheasants. But when it comes to Otter Tail County, Eric, this is another thing that the people of Otter Tail are going to be mad at me for, but there's pheasants in Otter Tail County that nobody likes to talk about.
There is. And it's, you know, it's obviously it's not at the top of most people's list when it comes to destinations to go pheasant hunting. But there's a lot of the terrain that they like, and there's a lot of public land to hunt. So whether it is pheasant or waterfowl or deer or grouse or whatever it is that you're looking for, there's a lot of, you know, within the state of Minnesota, there's wildlife management areas or WMAs. And if you go to the internet and you go to the DNR website and you look for WMAs and you type in this case, waterfall 39, you know, wildlife management areas in Otter Tail County that folks can go waterfall hunting at.
And a lot of those WMAs and even WPAs can be good for pheasants too. And I know a lot of guys that go out and shoot ducks in the morning, and then when they get done duck hunting, they throw on an orange vest and walk around the cattails and the slough that they just got done doing some duck hunting in. And where should people go if they want to come up and do some walking, do some waterfowl hunting, or maybe some fall fishing up in your neck of the woods, Eric?
Otter Tail, they can find their inner otter at OtterTailLakesCountry.com. And we are still running that contest where we're giving away the $500 gift certificates. So it's OtterTailLakesCountry.com/win. That's where you would register to win one of the 200 $500 gift cards. So go to that website, enter the contest, and we like to call it Otter Tail on Us. So if you win the $500, then we'll pay for your stay or your trip to come up and check out some hunting.
And that's through October 16th?
October 16th is when the deadline for registration for that is. Yes, sir.
Very good, Eric. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Broadcasting from the Tazen Lake Lodge Studios, this is Sporting Journal Radio.
Presented by OnX. Know where you stand with OnX.
It's game on, ladies and gentlemen. Everything is starting to open up now. So many of the bird seasons have opened or are about to open. The rough grouse season opened in Minnesota September 19, along with the spruce grouse and also sharpies in the northwest part of the state. The east central zone opens this weekend with sharptails, along with pheasants. That opens, of course, statewide. And then we're pretty much game on with everything. You can get out and do just about anything you want. The woods and the fields are going to be jam-packed with orange-clad hunters, while every slough, except in that southern zone, of course, will be filled with camouflage. Pheasants open in North Dakota this weekend, while South Dakota and Wisconsin open next weekend, the 17th. And we're going to talk pheasants this week, of course. We have to. But first, I want to talk grouse. And we have a few guests on this week's show that have some experience with the various grouse species here in the region, including Ted Dick, the Forest Game Bird Coordinator for the Minnesota DNR. Ted, thanks for coming on the show.
Sure, my pleasure.
We also have Jared Wicklund, Public Relations Specialist with Pheasants Forever. Jared, welcome back.
Hey, Brett, thanks for having me.
And we have Scott Rawl, Nobles County Pheasants Forever. Scott, I appreciate you coming on the show with us this week.
Thanks for asking.
And I'm looking forward. We're going to be doing some filming next week, and we'll talk a little bit more about this Veterans Hunt event that you do down in your neck of the woods down there next week. And I'm looking forward to being a part of that. But first, let's start with grouse. And Ted, let's start with you. What are we going to see in the woods around Minnesota this year for rough grouse? And what have people been reporting?
Well, like we were talking about earlier, Brett, that people don't always put a lot of significance on my predictions. I'm a little optimistic, but I will say this year it's been pretty good. You know, it's been open for a couple of weeks. I've been trying to get out just about every day, and the grouse numbers are good, and the woodcock numbers have been pretty good too, which adds a little extra to the luck. So weather was good over the summer, and they're kind of paying. It's been.
We're losing you just a little bit there, Ted. So we're going to work on that audio just a hair. But by the sounds of it, you said things are pretty good. People are seeing some good numbers. And of course, woodcock, I've found in the last few years, and maybe this goes back even more than the last few years, but I found that a lot of those grouse hunters, they're really excited about chasing woodcock. Sometimes I feel like people are more excited about chasing woodcock around out there than rough grouse, which to me that sounds I can't believe you'd hear that in this state, in Minnesota, where rough grouse I think is the unofficial state bird of Minnesota. But Jared, you've chased woodcock around quite a bit, haven't you?
I have. I hunt a little bit more up by Duluth near my native hometown. But the woodcock reports have been great. I've seen that in the woods myself. I know of a group of hunters at our office at Pheasants Forever who were up in northern Wisconsin last weekend.
All right, we got to take a quick break. I'm going to stop you there for a second, Jared. I want to find out how northern Wisconsin went, and we'll talk more about rough grouse in Minnesota, woodcock, and of course, it's a pheasant opener, so we're going to talk a lot about pheasants as well, too. More of Jared Wickland, Ted Dick, and Scott Rawl, and we come back on Sporting Journal Radio. If you want to have success fishing in Minnesota, you have to go where the fish are. And there may be no lake with more fish in it than Lake of the Woods. Not just big numbers of walleye, sauger, perch, eel pout, pike, muskie, bass, and sturgeon, but numbers of big fish too. Between the Rainy River, the main lake, and the Northwest Angle, you have over 50 resorts to choose from. Guided fishing allows for heated transportation to heated fish houses. Learn how to book a trip now at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
No matter how cold, no matter how much snow there is, the perch don't stand a chance.
Fish legendary Devil's Lake for their famous jumbo perch and walleye in the warm comfort of a snow bear at Haybale Heights Campground and Resort. Fishing for perch requires mobility, and you can't get more mobile than a fish house with tracks. The snow bear fleet is on the ice every day at Haybale Heights, and you could be too. Every winter requires a trip to Devil's Lake, and there's no better way to do it than in a snow bear at Haybale Heights. Visit HaybaleHeights.com to book your trip today.
On X Hunt. Ever heard of it? Next time you see that guy at your local shop who always punches his tag on a stud whitetail, ask him. He'll tell you about the most trusted source for mapping, with nationwide landowner names, private and public land boundaries, including walk-in areas, map tools to mark spots, and the ability to view your maps without cell service. And that's just scratching the surface. It's your time to be known as the big buck guy around town. Download the leader in hunt mapping on Google Play or the App Store. On X Hunt. Know where you stand.
Looking for fall adventure? Might as well pick a place with over 1,000 lakes. Otter Tail County, Minnesota is in the middle of everywhere, offers a simpler pace, and has something for everyone. Find your inner otter at ottertaillakescountry.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio. Broadcasting from the Tazen Lake Lodge Studios, this is Sporting Journal Radio, presented by OnX. Know where you stand with OnX.
We're back. I'm Brett Amundson. Our guests are Jared Wickland from Pheasants Forever, Ted Dick, the Forest Game Bird Coordinator for the DNR, and also Scott Rawl from Nobles County Pheasants Forever, talking about grouse, rough grouse, sharpies, and pheasants, of course. And before the break, Jared, you were talking about hunting up in northern Wisconsin.
Yeah, a couple of folks were up in northern Wisconsin. Wasn't a very big group, but they had some pointing dogs on the ground. And I was told just the other day that they thought they pointed a 100 woodcock in about 2 hours.
Holy
on
smokes.
On one particular patch of ground. So that's pretty impressive numbers. So I'm not sure if the woodcock migration is on. Maybe Ted can point to that a little bit. But typically, you know, the first 10, 14 days in October is pretty good for woodcock. And that's a time when I like to zoom in on them as well.
Yeah, Ted, are hunters reporting a lot of woodcock out there right now?
Can you hear me better now, Brett, that I'm closer to the phone?
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
Okay. Yeah, you know, we had pretty good start. We had some of those days where we get 48 or 50 flushes in a couple hours, and it was good, but it slowed down a little bit now. So that's kind of what we're thinking, is some of the birds have moved out a little bit. I know some of my grad school buddies are hunting, you know, down close to the cities, getting 10 flushes an hour at Carlos Avery. And so it seems like started good. Some of them have moved, but there'll be some more coming in and pick up. So, yeah, it's nice to have those. A lot of people kind of fall back on those. Numerous, but those of us who hunt with dogs that know how to cook them, kind of hate to admit it, but we like them even more than the king.
No, boy. Yeah, we lost you there a little bit, but I think you said when you talk, you know how to hunt them and then how to cook them, I think is what I heard you say, that sometimes you like chasing them more than rough grouse.
Well, yeah, they sort of have a reputation as tasting kind of funny, but if you know how to do it, they're pretty good. And so, yeah, the way they hold for a dog and the numbers, the way they can change overnight, woodcock are a lot of fun, and a lot of us appreciate them as much or more than grouse.
I know a couple of years ago, Ted, the DNR put out some drumming counts, and then hunters had a tough year that fall. And was there a decision made not to put those numbers out then after that, or were you still putting numbers out?
No, that was in 2017, and that was the year I told everyone to buy more dogs and more ammunition because it wouldn't be safe to go out because there were some grouse around. But it didn't really pan out, and part of that was just the way the survey, just an anomaly there where the way they weight the different routes, there was a little bit of an issue there. But we still do the surveys that came out this year, but because of COVID, it didn't get done until it didn't get published until mid to late August. So the southern part of the state didn't get done because we missed those dates in April, but the rest of the state got done, and the overall number was pretty similar to last year.
Okay. Where are we in the cycle right now?
It's hard to say for sure. That the cycle hasn't been holding quite as well as it used to, but if you look at 2017 as a peak, we've probably declined from that for the last couple of years, and I don't know if we're quite at the bottom. I think Charlotte Roy, our grouse research person, she says we're still kind of trending down a little bit, but I don't know. It's interesting to watch, but to me, the weather in June and the hatch conditions are the thing that I put more importance on when you're trying to gauge how it's going to be. And that played out last year. You know, we were sort of in the lower part of the cycle, but we had a good hatch. And that bore out at the national hunt, the RDS event, where they do a ratio or a recruitment ratio, where they look at the number of birds young of the year compared to adult females, and that was quite high, highest in 20 years. And look at the harvest last year. The harvest was up about 20% from the years prior, maybe 18%. So that to me was more important. And we had good breeding conditions this year too, so I'm hoping for the same.
My gosh, I think we are great breeding conditions for so many things out there this year. And we had, I know Jared, you and I talked about this fairly recently, but the end of last winter, there were pheasants all over the place. And I know winter started off a little tough for them, but then I felt like it was a pretty easy winter for them and a great spring for them. And then when you have a number, and Ted, I'm not going to put you on the spot like this, but I'm going to talk to Scott and Jared about this. But when you have a number like 146% increase in southwestern Minnesota, how do you even publicize that? I mean, like, especially when in the past you put out a big number and then it hasn't always translated to a great hunting season. That's pretty bold throwing out a number like 146% increase out there. Don't you guys think?
Yeah, I really do. You know, it's interesting because you look at where the population was last year and people, you know, you hear it on the landscape once in a while, like, well, 100% increase of one is two. And, you know, I don't think that's the case though, because in a lot of ways, there were a lot of birds in the landscape, and last year, I don't think was a great representation of the hunting season. It was so wet last year that a lot of people had trouble getting to the birds to harvest them, or to even see them. So that was a big factor in that. But I know Scott lives down there, and he lives that lifestyle, and I know he's been seeing them on the landscape. Isn't that right, Mr. Rowe?
We certainly have. I know that when we talk about pheasant numbers, and I don't know if I can speak to 100%, but for the last 5 years, not counting June of 2020, but for the last 5 years prior to that, Nobles County had more than 10 inches of rain in the first 10 days of June every year for the 5 years in 18, 17, 16, 15. And so we had almost no rain in that peak of the hatch, June 10th-ish, during that period. And I believe that there will be some spots that will actually show 100% increase in the bird numbers that are around. Obviously, that's not 100% everywhere. But when you go from drowned out nesting conditions 5 years in a row to a mild winter that Brett was referring to, and then pristine nesting conditions as far as rain, we had some rain early in the month. We got a great insect hatch, lots of grasshoppers, lots of different stuff around. So, I mean, I had one guy told me the other day he walked a half a mile down a boundary of a public hunting area in Nobles County to take his son out to do some duck hunting. And they didn't see any ducks, but he saw 40 roosters in an hour and a half period when he sat there hunting with his boy. So I think the numbers are going to be up and up substantially, whether that equates to 147% or but up is going to be the arrow is pointing up in a steep angle.
Why don't
and
well, go ahead, Jared.
To add on to that too, I would say, you know, when we talk to our staff and we talk to agency biologists and things like that, the reports that we're hearing, what I've heard from our Minnesota staff, is that people are seeing more pheasants than they've seen in you know, maybe the last 10 years. So I think there's a lot of hype for the season. We hope it correlates over to selling more pheasant stamps, selling more hunting licenses, because even during COVID, you know, Mother Nature's not slowing down. Neither can we. We need to get that conservation funding, or continue to have that conservation funding coming in. And hunters play a huge role in that.
Yeah, and I'll be honest. I didn't necessarily disagree with the number 146%. I just thought it was interesting that number came out, because that's a big number to put out there. But boy, when you drive around out here in western Minnesota, there's birds along the gravel roads. You know, there's, when we're out there in the sloughs duck hunting, we're seeing them fly around. We're hearing them cackle behind us as the sun's coming up. It's a beautiful sound, man. It's a beautiful sight. I cannot wait for the season. I wish I had a working dog. Unfortunately, I got one that's broken right now, although I'm pretty happy with how she's looked the last couple of days. I'm holding out hope that at least by November I might be able to run her a little bit. And then I got a 10-week-old that's just, she's got a lot of ambition, but I don't think she's there.
They all do at that age.
Yeah. More bird talk with Jared Wicklund, Ted Dick, and Scott Rowland when we come back on Sporting Journal Radio.
Looking for fall adventure? Might as well pick a place with over 1,000 lakes. Otter Tail County, Minnesota is in the middle of everywhere, offers a simpler pace, and has something for everyone. Find your inner otter at ottertaillakescountry.com.
No matter how cold, no matter how much snow there is, the perch don't stand a chance.
Fish legendary Devil's Lake for their famous jumbo perch and walleye in the warm comfort of a snow bear at Haybale Heights Campground and Resort. Fishing for perch requires mobility, and you can't get more mobile than a fish house with tracks. The snow bear fleet is on the ice every day at Haybale Heights, and you could be too. Every winter requires a trip to Devil's Lake, and there's no better way to do it than in a snow bear at Haybale Heights. Visit haybaleheights.com to book your trip today.
On X Hunt. Ever heard of it? Next time you see that guy at your local shop who always punches his tag on a stud whitetail, ask him. He'll tell you about the most trusted source for mapping, with nationwide landowner names, private and public land boundaries, including walk-in areas, map tools to mark spots, and the ability to view your maps without cell service. And that's just scratching the surface. It's your time to be known as the big buck guy around town. Download the leader in hunt mapping on Google Play or the App Store. On X Hunt. Know where you stand.
If you want to have success fishing in Minnesota, you have to go where the fish are. And there may be no lake with more fish in it than Lake of the Woods. Not just big numbers of walleye, sauger, perch, eel pout, pike, muskie, bass, and sturgeon, but numbers of big fish too. Between the Rainy River, the main lake, and the Northwest Angle, you have over 50 resorts to choose from. Guided fishing allows for heated transportation to heated fish houses. Learn how to book a trip now at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio. Broadcasting from the Tazen Lake Lodge studios, this is Sporting Journal Radio. Presented by OnX. Know where you stand with OnX.
Welcome back. I'm Brett Amundson. Our guests are Jared Wicklund from Pheasants Forever, also Ted Dick, the Forest Game Bird Coordinator for the Minnesota DNR, and Scott Rawl from Nobles County Pheasants Forever. And Scott, let's talk about the public land that you hunted recently out west.
For the longest time, when I headed to South Dakota to shoot sharptails, we always ended up in the Fort Pierre National Grasslands. And that's, I think, 110,000 acres. And we ended up, when we were there, we always go about 10 days after the opener, because it kind of lets some of the initial hurry-scurry of all the people around kind of come and go. But we still ran into a number of hunters in the Fort Pierre National Grasslands. So probably about 5 years ago, we opted to drive another, maybe almost a couple hours out to the Buffalo Gap National Grasslands, which are by Kadoka Wall and out in that area. There's 90-some thousand acres of public land there. And one of the things that we did this year when we were out there, you mentioned Onyx and helping people find properties, but we went on some walks out there years ago where all the birds were all in little ravines, all where the snowberries were at. So you'd walk 2 miles, find a ravine, have some shooting, then you'd pick up and walk another 2 or 3 miles till you found another spot that was just right. And so we started using Onyx because you could actually zoom in, see the topography, you know, if you were going to walk this 2 miles, how many ravines were in it, you know, and you can actually see vegetation and all kinds of different things with that. And so this year we were out and we hunted in this, we probably covered 60 some miles hunting in different spots just to try to continue to learn our way around down there. But we used Onyx and looked for ravines that had cottonwood trees down. And when we walked through those, we still walked 8 or 9 miles a day, but when we found them in big concentrations and had one of the best hunts I've ever had. We spent 4 nights in Kadoka, 4 or 5. I saw one bird hunter, one. He was in the parking lot of the hotel on his way home from Montana. So in those 90-some thousand acres and in 5 days, and we covered a couple hundred square miles. Wow. Never saw another bird hunter in that time. So there's lots of opportunity there. The bird numbers were way solid. We had probably one of the best grouse hunting trips I've ever had in my life.
Ted, I know you're in the woods, but what are you hearing about the prairie grouse in Minnesota?
Well, from what I understand, the prairie chicken, you know, that's a special drawing lottery season. I had some friends who did that, and they had no trouble finding their birds. I do know there's a long-term concern for those populations.
Well, I just don't know if we have the habitat for them anymore, of course. And
but in Minnesota, when you're kind of in the transition between the prairie and the forest, you know, the habitat takes work. It doesn't last forever. So just like with sharptails, when we need to keep shearing it and burning it, it's the same.
You need that disturbance. And Ted, I want to ask you about a couple of things with rough grouse in northern Minnesota. Like when it comes to logging, with the decrease in logging, what kind of effect is that having on grouse and rough grouse, spruce grouse wildlife up in northern Minnesota?
Well, there's a couple of things there, and one, I want to apologize for my cold again. It's embarrassing that I can't talk. But, you know, there's different ownerships, and on the state land, with our recent sustainable timber harvest, you know, we're cutting as much aspen as almost as we ever have. We're 400,000 cords a year. So if you look for that young aspen forest that's 10 to 15 years old, we're going to be supplying that on state land. But a third of our land is also private land. And there's also a chunk that's county and federal land. And I know that the federal land, like on the Superior and the Chippewa, they've reduced their clear cutting aspen harvests over the last 10 years. And that's where I am right now, right by Grand Rapids. And I hunt a lot by Reamer, and a lot of that's federal land. And when you look at the change in the map from 1996 to 2016, I think if you're looking for that aspen that's 10 to 20 years old, I think we lost over 100,000 acres of that just on the chip. That makes a big difference. That's like 100 sections of land in that prime condition that aren't there anymore because they're managing for different things. But on the state land, we still have it there. Private land depends more on the price of wood. Right now, the price of pulp is quite low, so there won't be much harvesting on that.
All right. And then what about the West Nile? And was there a neonicotinoid study on rough grouse, or was that just on sharptails?
I didn't hear the second part of the question, but the West Nile study we did for 2 years. The results from last year just came out, and they were similar to the year before, that about 12% of the bird sampled by hunters had been exposed.
12%? Of birds taken by hunters have been exposed?
Yeah, and that was lower than in Wisconsin or Michigan. So not too surprising, but the key thing there is you'd still like to know young birds are not surviving the summer because they got West Nile. That's West Nile season. And, you know, when we talk about broods having an effect, if birds are get to the fall, that would be more interesting. But we feel like we found out what we needed to on the hunter survey, and we appreciate the input and the help of the Rough Grouse Society. And we got numbers, we met our sample goals, and I'm not as concerned about it as I was before we did that study.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you coming and doing this interview, Ted. You're not 100%, by the way.
I usually like to give it 120%.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
When I start to talk too much, my voice gets a little hoarse. Sure.
Sure. Scott, next weekend, I'm going to be coming down to your neck of the woods. Let's talk about what you're doing next weekend and why it's important to you.
Well, I'm really looking forward to having you come. And you've been in southwest Minnesota for the governor's hunt back in 14, so you kind of know what our terrain looks like. But our local Pheasants Forever chapter hooked up with an organization called Warriors Never Give Up. I met those folks almost by accident. They had a trailer over at Shields Dog Days in Sioux Falls, and I walked by the trailer and said, "What do you guys do?" And they were primarily took veterans fishing. And I said, "Well, how about we take some veterans for a hunt in Minnesota?" They had never done an event in Minnesota. They were basically a South Dakota outfit. And I said, "Well, we can show you how that's done correctly." And so we hooked up with them This is our third or fourth year. We bring in veterans. This year we're hosting 21 veterans. All they have to do is figure out how to get to Worthington and buy a license. And so for 2.5 days, we show these American heroes how honored we are to have them and to show them that we appreciate what they've done for our country. And so we have a meet and greet on Friday night. We hunt private lands all day Saturday. And then we get back up again on Sunday and hunt some more private lands on Sunday. These guys are coming in from all over the United States. We have veterans from Utah, from California, from Tennessee. We had a Navy underwater salvage instructor from Key West, Florida came last year. I've gotten to meet Medal of Honor winners and all kinds of just the most incredible veterans, the bravest people you'd ever want to know. They come hang out in Worthington and have an opportunity to interact with other veterans that share some of the trials and tribulations, both physically and mentally, that they have from their time in combat and different things. And I used to think that the pheasant hunt, that's the deal. We're going to bring them to Worthington and we're going to show them what pheasant hunting is all about. And it kind of came to the conclusion it's an opportunity for 20 veterans from all over the United States to all carry heavy burdens, many of them, an opportunity for them to interact with each other, share each stories with each other. We go out, they get to shoot a rooster or two. Last year, I took 10 birds to the taxidermist. These guys had, one, not seen a pheasant before, two, not shot a pheasant before. And so a lot of them, they took those mementos home as taxidermy. And we do lots of great things. Nobles County Pheasants Forever is one of the number one land acquisition chapters in North America. And we've acquired 43 parcels of public property in 35 years. And I can tell you that our Veterans Appreciation Hunt, in connection with Warriors Never Give Up, we're also developing a relationship with an organization called Hometown Heroes. They're another nonprofit out of the metro area that takes primarily veterans fishing. And they're coming down with a couple of their guys and three vets. And so we raise funds special, and we host these guys and show them our appreciation for keeping our country free. So it's one of the coolest things I've ever been involved in.
That's great. And as much as I enjoy pheasant hunting or fishing in general, it's so much fun to be able to take somebody like that out there or take somebody new or introduce it to them and watch them discover what we enjoy so much about it. So hats off to you, Scott. I'm looking forward to being down there with you next week. And it's the best time of the year, guys. Opener, another opener for us in any case, but it's game on. The leaves are going to start coming off the trees. You're going to be able to see some of those birds you're flushing in the woods up there by Grand Rapids, Ted. And we're gonna have a good fall, I think, if you're chasing something with wings out there. So Scott Rall, Ted Dick, and Jared Wicklund, good luck out there in the fields and the woods the rest of the year. And thanks for being on the show.
Everybody,
thanks for having us, Brett.
Make sure you get your orange on and get outside because it's going to be a great time.
All right, we have an extended version of this interview with a lot more content coming to the Finding Fur and Feathers Hunting Podcast. Make sure you subscribe today.
Sporting Journal Radio is a division of Macaba LLC. If you've got a question, comment, or story idea for us, send us an email. Go to sportingjournalradio.com.